It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to the Buckets and Tea NBA show. I'm your host, Catherine Nyker. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode. Joining me, you know him, you love him. It's Vivek Jacob. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I like that we had a little prequel to get, right into this thing.
And yes.
Ready to go.
Sick. Yeah. We shared our new desk accessories, or at least I did, and just talked about the craziness of our lives. Per usual, it's been once again an eventful week in the NBA. We're going to do NBA first and then Raptors. And yes, of course, we are going to talk about the pizza party. Most definitely. But first, I want to talk a little bit with you about Team USA. So it is not, I don't think it actually is confirmed. I feel like there's speculation as to whether or not this roster is in fact 100% confirmed or not. Shams had a tweet earlier this week, and then other people started aggregating it. But I think it is more or less locked in at this point that this would be the starting five for Team USA. It would be Steph Curry, Jason Tatum, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and they have listed Joel Embiid, but it will be interesting to see if he's healthy or if he opts in to play in the Olympics this year. But that is a heck of a starting five. Past that, there's Anthony Edwards, Devin Booker, I believe
Kawhi Leonard.
I mean, that's insane. I mean, somehow it feels better than even an all-star team. Somehow. I'm not saying that's actually true, but it's quite stacked.
No, it's true.
What do you think of this year's Team USA?
Well, it's better than an all-star team because they will try for one.
Shots fired, but no, very valid shots fired.
I think they're going to be pretty determined. I think this is the thing that happens now, right? Where they name like a B squad and then they don't really get over the line at the world championships. And then people start talking their smack and then they'll show up at the Olympics with the full squad and be like, well, we're still the kings of this. And so I think that's where we're headed. I think they'll be ready. I think, especially with some of the guys on, their final Olympic chance.
Yes.
And Steph, like it's going to be his first and his last. Mm-hmm. And so I think there might actually be a bit of a 92 Dream Team vibe to this where, with 92, you had, oh, this was like the only chance to see MJ and Bird and Magic together. And now I think you're going to get a bit of
Barkley,
that.
Barkley, yeah.
Yeah, and now you're going to get, LeBron and Kawhi and
Durant
and Steph all together. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, I agree. It does feel like a culmination of a generational moment. It feels very millennial and weirdly existential at the same time. Just knowing like this is absolutely like their last Olympics for a lot of these guys. And I agree. I think this has one of those very special Team USA feelings to it. I mean, you started to see it kind of last summer brewing when LeBron was like, come on, like we got to do this, and was recruiting Steph, kept talking about how much he wants to play with Steph. I don't think there was a ton of legitimacy with those trade rumors that happened a few weeks ago. I think that was PR stuff, but and we talked about that on this pod, my conspiracy theories around that. But I think this is an opportunity for them to play together, and I think it's gonna be really special. I agree. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is because, Team Canada obviously has a special team. And, you know, if they're filming a documentary around this Team USA, which I imagine with LeBron, he would, Dylan Brooks is just the most perfect foe. You know what I mean? Because he is going to, like, in this one moment, because I don't know that much about Dylan Brooks outside of basketball. Thank God he's Canadian. Thank God he's Canadian, because I just feel like he will do everything he can to annoy every single person on that team. And I can't wait. It's going to be so fun. Like, even if Team Canada, I'm not suggesting I think this will happen, but even if Team Canada loses by more than 20 points, he is going to make it fun. You know what I mean? And also, I think we're obviously going to be very competitive against the rest of the world. We did win bronze in FIBA, and I think Team Canada could easily, well, I shouldn't say easily, but very solid chance of medaling in this Olympics. Do you think Team Canada would have like a decent shot at this Team USA, or, you know, we're, it's 1992 all over again, we're just playing for silver, bronze kind of situation?
I think the only way there could be a potential problem is, you know, you have like this mix of the young guys and the old guys for Team USA, and maybe you get a couple of the young guys trying to be like, oh, well, this is my team. And the old guys are kind of like, hey, this is our last chance. We're trying to do our thing. But maybe they just lay back, you know, and, you know, we saw that a little bit, you know, in 92 when, you know, Bird and Magic, they weren't playing much. Right. And they were just kind of like, you know, let these guys do their thing. We'll show up when we need to. And then when it really came down to it, and then MJ was going off and he was making his mark. And so I think it could be a similar situation, but I think chemistry is the only thing that could get in the way of this USA team. You know, like if Joel Embiid shows up and is like, I want the ball every possession, you know, I want to show the best player. I think that's where you could maybe poke some holes at them.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're Team Canada, absolutely. You should be the second or third best team in the mix. I think, you know, Serbia was missing quite a few guys in that World Cup. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they were missing Jokic for crying out loud, and they still got the silver. So,
yeah, I was going to say they looked really good.
Yeah. So I think they're going to be forced to reckon with. And again, you know, if you're going up against a USA team that potentially has Embiid, then you want to have a guy like Jokic. If they don't have Embiid, they're kind of thin at the big position. And so Jokic becomes a huge advantage. And that's something that Canada doesn't really have, like a great big man, right?
That's true. I mean, shout out to Kelly Olynyk, but yes, you know, yeah.
Yes. Much respect to Kelly and Dwight.
Yeah.
But that's probably a position that you're looking at taking a bit of a beating. And so you need Jamal Murray to be there. I don't know what his status is going to be, you know, if the Nuggets go deep again. So I think you absolutely need Shea and Jamal in the backcourt, right? And then we'll see what happens with Andrew Wiggins. Obviously, he's at a down season. So maybe you just feel like, you know, that situation is not going to work out. But yeah, you absolutely need your best guys there. And then I think you need some chemistry stuff to go wrong with Team USA. And then maybe, you know, you can sneak one against them.
Who do you think, like, just for fun, who do you think LeBron gets into an internal argument with?
An internal argument.
Yeah. Like, is it him and Anthony Edwards butting heads? Is it him and Joel? I think I actually think Anthony Davis would end up being on this team. I have a feeling Joel
might
not do it.
Yeah. You know, I could definitely see Anthony Davis on there. Let's say, you know, Joel Embiid does end up going and he is kind of like, hey, I'm not getting the ball enough and all of that, you know, and I would love to see LeBron just like retweet you know, when Kevin Love was on the Cavs and he did the whole like fit in or fit out.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be amazing. Yeah. But yeah. I agree. I think our top guys will have a hell of a showing in the Olympics, but I think this team is going to be, yeah, like you said, pretty much impossible. Like it would have to be one of those, like they beat themselves type of situations. But as a pure basketball fan, super excited to see all these guys on the same team. I think it's going to be really, really special. Okay. Speaking of LeBron, he's been in the news again this week, but specifically about his son, Bronny. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Bronny making the leap into the NBA. He plays at USC right now. He has not, you know, declared for the draft yet. I think he averages like 5 or 6 points a game. You know, he's like kind of like a solid college player, but I don't know to what degree people would consider him an NBA prospect yet. Somebody did a mock draft. I don't think it takes a lot to get LeBron's attention, to be honest. And, you know, they're talking about Bronny in the mock draft, and LeBron was just like, hey, like, let this kid be a kid. And, you know, I think that's really interesting for a few reasons that I'll get into in a minute. But I'll just also add that, like, stupid Stephen A just like went in on LeBron and was like, this is your fault. You're the one who told everybody that you want to play with your son and blah, blah, blah. And like, I don't know. Like, I think there's some truth to that, but it's also like, what the hell? Like, you're making, you know, once again, making something out of nothing. But I think, you know, the way I kind of look at this situation, Vivek, is like, I feel like, you know, like parents have a dream for you. Like parents just always have dreams for their kids. And sometimes you grow into those dreams for them and sometimes you don't. And yep. I feel like with Bronny, you know, especially after he had that heart attack in the summer, like he suffered cardiac arrest in the summer and it was super scary. I mean, he's only 18, right? Or 19. And like, maybe being in the NBA isn't in the cards for this guy. Like, I could see him maybe having a roster spot like a Thanasis, you know, with the Bucks, but I don't know if he's going to be like a legitimate contributing NBA player. And maybe I think LeBron is kind of seeing that writing on the wall a bit more. So I think that's kind of why he's like, I'm just going to protect my kid and take a step back from this. He's not going to leave the Lakers. I don't see that happening at all. And I do kind of feel bad for Bronny, even though he obviously has a very charmed life. I just feel like playing basketball and having those expectations must be very daunting. I've said a lot. Please go ahead.
No, I agree with you. The expectations are just through the roof and it's like impossible to live up to. And I think, you know, you go back to another GOAT, Michael Jordan, and the way his kids were followed and the expectations that came with that, they didn't, you know, pan out to be NBA players. And so I think, you know, we might be headed down a similar path here. And, you know, I'm sure Bronny is going to set himself up for success in other avenues if it's not basketball. And if it's basketball, maybe he does need to take an extra year of college or whatever it may be to get himself in a better position to make the NBA. And so, and I don't think he should be judged for it, right? Like, I think when you look at other players who don't come in with that same pressure, you look at Del Curry, for example, wasn't an all-time great, had a very respectable NBA career. Mm-hmm. But when Steph comes in, it's not like, you know, people are saying, oh, is he going to be, you know, is he going to live up to what Dell did? Is he going to do this? Is he going to do that? And then he ends up being the greatest shooter of all time.
Yeah, like Seth Curry has the more Dell Curry-like career.
Right. And so I think the pressure is just immense. And again, I absolutely agree with like, let the kid be a kid. I also get that at the same time, it's just part of the package of being LeBron, right? Like at the same time, every year, there are a lot of other kids who are getting dropped out of the draft, you know? It's just, this is going to have so much more attention because it's LeBron James' son.
I think I completely agree. I think, you know, Bronny, because it's not like he needs the money. You know what I mean? He's not in a position where like he's trying to create generational wealth for his family, right? Like he has it. He could literally just stay in university, graduate, right? And then become some like tech douchebag. You know what I mean? And become a billionaire by the time he's like 30, because he's Bronny, and of course people would want to associate whatever they're creating and their brands with him. Like, I like, to me, there's such an easy path for his life that has nothing to do with basketball. Like, I think like being an athlete is a very glamorous life, but it's also a very difficult life. Like, it's hard to be an athlete. You know what I mean? And it's like, if you don't have to do that to yourself, why, like, why would you? Like, to me, I'm just like, be the Gen Z tech douchebag you're destined to be.
Unless you really, really love basketball.
Unless you really, really love basketball. It's possible that he is just passionate about the game. That is possible. But, you know, that would be unfortunate for
him. Yeah, no, that's the thing, right? At some point, it's like, you're getting to chase this dream if it's your dream, and you know, take your best crack at it. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of other people chasing this dream, and if they happen to be better than you, at what may or may not be your passion, then you might have to just look elsewhere.
Imagine the hourglass emoji tweet was about Bronny's career.
Okay, I don't mind you take it there.
I'm sorry, I just thought of it.
That is hilarious.
I'm obviously joking, okay, everybody? I'm obviously joking.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. That's okay, we should thank you. We should move on. Okay, so there's been more referee drama in the NBA this week, particularly with the Knicks and Detroit. Detroit lost a game after a really bad no call that happened at the end of the game. And then Coach Monty Williams went on, another epic rant. We've had several epic coaching rants this year. Obviously, we had Darko's. We also had Mike Brown's rant where he like got out the iPad and he was like actually showing the media like what he was talking about and what was egregious and why. And now we have Monty Williams saying this was the worst call/no call of the season, that this was egregious. He essentially walked out of his press conference after the fact and didn't take any other additional questions. You know, I guess like it's really hard for Detroit because they've only won, I think it's like 8 games this season, which is rough, man. That's rough. Like even in like the dog days of like Raptors seasons, like, we had more than 8 games. Like I haven't as a homer lived through something that low, but like, you know, like when a game is close and you lose, like I can only imagine how frustrating that is for them. And then like the league immediately after kind of admitting like, yeah, this was a bad no call and stuff. And it just seems like there's sort of this trend. Maybe it's not a trend. I know this happens every year, but there's certainly a trend between animosity with the coaches, but also this year with the refs kind of losing their tempers and throwing people out, what I would say is kind of quickly. So I feel like there's this building tension on both sides, and that's something that I've been saying throughout the season. So my question for you, Vivek, is like, what do you make of this situation? And do you think the NBA should be adjusting any rules around reviews and end of games and things like that?
Well, first thing, you know, seeing the increase of coaching rants, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, it's kind of like a whole tell me coaches are making more money without telling me coaches are making more money. It's like, I'll take this coin. Monty Williams is making, what, $13 million this year? And he's saying, I don't care about these
contracts anymore. He has the most egregious contract. Isn't it like 80 million over 5 years or something like crazy?
Something like that. I mean, I think Eric Spoelstra is now the highest paid coach after his recent extension.
That's right. But Steve Kerr only signed for 2 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
So Steve Kerr might be the highest on a per year basis.
That's right.
And then, yeah. And so I think now the coaches are getting into that category. And it's part of why, you know, the players go at the refs the way they do. You know, I don't think it was a coincidence that after Fred got the bag, he was able to go at Ben Taylor the way he did. And so I think that has something to do with it in terms of how vociferous they are with the expressing their frustrations. And so I do think there is an issue. I do think these games are kind of reaching a tipping point where Adam Silver and whoever else is going to have to get together at the end of the season and say, you know, what can we put in place to avoid these kind of egregious mistakes, right? Like, I don't think there's any way you can combat, say, what happened between the Lakers and the Raptors, where it's just a continuous game flow where, you know, one team is getting the calls and the other isn't.
Right.
But I think in these late game situations, I don't know if there's just a way to contest that, saying, you know, whether or not you have a challenge, there has to be some type of ruling and where the replay center is able to just step in, right? Like, regardless of who is challenging, who is not, just saying, hey, like, this absolutely can't, like, this is too much of a missed call to ignore.
Yeah. I agree. I think two things should happen. One, I think in the final 2 minutes of a game, I think you should be able to review something regardless of what was originally called. Right. Like, yeah. I think especially for like a casual fan, this whole idea of like, you can review this, but you can't review that because what was originally called was XYZ. I feel like that gets confusing and very muddled. I think if you're going to review it, especially in the final 2 minutes of a game. Now, I don't want, you know, everything to be reviewed and blah, 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 but it's just like, if you're going to do it, do it. The other thing I think should change is, I think teams should have, like, you know, like the coaches challenge. Every team should just have two coaches challenges each, and that's it. I don't think it should be like, if you lost your challenge, you don't get it back, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, just have two. If you lose both, you lose both. Because I think that way teams can use one during the first three quarters of a game, whether it's, you know, a star player in foul trouble or you're, you know, you feel a momentum shifting or something like that. And then you have one at the end of the game, if it's close, for a moment like this. I think that to me is the fairest way to do it. Like, I don't think like teams should be punished because they wanted to challenge something and it didn't go their way. Like, I think that's kind of silly. You know what I mean? Like, what's this punishment for?
Right. And so they did modify the rules slightly this year, saying that, hey, if you get your first challenge right,
you get
one more challenge.
Yeah.
But if you get your first challenge wrong, then you're done. And I think that punishes teams because it's like, hey, unless it's an absolutely egregious, like, no-brainer that will be overturned, we're not going to use this because we probably going to lose it for the rest of the game, right? And so I think there has to be that opportunity to just say, hey, maybe it's you do it by half, right? Where
one in the first half, one in the second half.
Yeah. And so, and you say like, hey, you have, it ended up, and that same rule applies to each half where it's like, hey, you have one for the first half. If you get it right the first time, you still have another for the remainder of the half.
Right.
And then, well, then you could end up
having like four coaches challenges a game.
No. So it resets at the start of the second half. So again, you go into the second half saying, hey, you've got a challenge again, and if you get it right, you've got one more to use.
Right. Okay.
So technically, you could have as many as four in the whole game and two in each half.
Right. But would that, yeah, I wonder if that slows down the game too much. But I think regardless, like, but I do like the idea of spacing it out. Like, I think, yeah, I just feel like in this modern era where, you know, especially we as fans have instant replay, obviously. I mean, we've had that on TV for a long time, but you know what I mean? Like, it's on Twitter and blah, 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 you know, and then in the stadium and then the refs having access to it. It just doesn't make sense to me to have so many egregious end of game calls.
Right.
You know, so I just feel like there does need to be some amendments there. And then hopefully that will like relieve some of the animosity, because the animosity isn't good for the game. You know what I mean? Like, basketball needs referees. Basketball needs nuance, right? Like, it just does.
I think a big thing that would also just take away from the general frustration is calling the game the same in the regular season as you would in the postseason. I think some of the frustration is also because, like, some people know how the game is called in the postseason. And then there's like this adjustment that has to happen in the regular season because it's not called the same way.
And right. It's like, so it's more physical in the playoffs, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, hey, can you just, and hey, guess what? That would actually help speed up the game, because if you allow more physicality, you're not calling, you're not blowing the whistle every 10 seconds, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that happens in the regular season where it's like, dudes are going to the line all the time, and you're seeing teams get to the line, you know, 40, 50 times a game. And that slows down the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you just let them play a little bit more in the regular season, everyone would be okay with it.
Yeah, I think so. I think they probably all want to play more physically. That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's for them to say. Who am I to say they should play more physically or not?
Like, playoff games end up taking more time just because of like advertising and TV timeouts and all of that, right? And okay, sure, like, you know, you are, you know, walking the ball up a bit more and you're playing in the half court a bit more, but I think there is a path to the regular season just being a bit more physical, and you're letting players play through stuff a bit more, and that actually speeding up the game a bit more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious to see if this summer we'll get some amendments or not. I think we will. Let's talk a little bit about the 65 game rule. So Vivek recently wrote a piece about this for Sportsnet. You can definitely check that out, where players have to play a minimum of 65 games in order to qualify for end of season awards, MVP, et cetera, et cetera. Vivek, how do you think this is affecting the league this season?
So I do think that on the whole, there's probably been mixed results. I think obviously there will be frustration when you look at a guy like Joel Embiid and say, okay, you know, his numbers are absolutely ridiculous, and maybe if the 65 game rule wasn't there, he might not have, you know, forced himself to play in certain games. Maybe he doesn't get as hurt, and he ends up playing like 60 games, and because of the numbers he's putting up, you know, he should at least be in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that maybe is getting lost is the fact that before this rule, voters still discounted people for not playing enough games, right? It just wasn't like set in stone. Like, if you played 50 games and someone was playing at a similar level but played 70 games, voters would give the guy who played 70 games an edge. Like, this has happened before with Joel Embiid. I think where I come down on it is, as long as the NBA has back-to-backs, I think it's a bit unfair to set it as high as it is right now. On average, there are 13 back-to-backs that a team plays in a season. And reasonably, like, there's enough data to show that the product isn't as good. Teams don't play as well. Player performance declines, playing with zero rest. And so I don't think there should be the expectation that they should be playing those games. And so I think for me, if the NBA wants to set out this mandate of playing 80% of the games, then just get rid of back-to-backs. Reduce the season to like 72 games. And then if you want to say you got to play like 58 out of the 72 or 70 games, then I'd say, okay, yeah, that's fine. Because yeah, you're taking like, back-to-backs out of the equation.
Or like make preseason shorter and like start the regular season earlier. Because they're still together and on the road for that same amount of time, right? Like you're not adding more time to like their travel and their workouts or something. You're just like shifting it a bit. Cause I mean, I don't know, like to me, preseason, is it 2 weeks?
Yeah. But I mean, the crazy part is there was a time where it used to be even longer.
Yes. It used to be even longer. Yeah. I've forgotten how long it is now. It's 2 to 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah. They play about 5 games.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know how valuable preseason is for people. Like I haven't heard people talk about that as like we really needed that time.
Yeah.
I like, feel like I mean, people are always figuring things out during the season. Am I crazy for that?
If anything, you could probably bring it down to like 3 games and get it done like, you know, in a week, week and a half.
Right. And then that just gives you more time. So yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely think that like, I mean, when I first heard about the 65 rule, I wasn't like against it, but I thought, okay, this will be interesting. Right. Yeah. But I completely agree with you about the back-to-backs and you're right. Like voters did count missed games towards these awards. That's why Kawhi hasn't won a regular season MVP. Right. Yeah. Because he just never played enough games. And like that was always kind of understood. And I've never once heard him like complain about that. Not that he talks a lot, but you know what I mean? So, yeah. And like
did you see what happened with him recently where he was asked about all the games he's played this season?
And, yes.
And how he's been able to be so healthy.
Yeah, but yeah, they were like, how have you been able to play so many games this year? And he's like, I don't have a torn ACL or a torn meniscus, basically. Like, what the hell? What do you mean? Why have I been able to play so much? It's weird. It's like people don't believe he's been injured. I don't know why that is.
And so that's the thing. It's like because of the rule now, the fact that it came in this year, people are assuming that, oh, Kawhi is playing in so many games now because there's this rule. Mm-hmm. And it's like, guess what? If the rule was there last year, if the rule was there a year before, that was not going to change how many games he played last year or the year before because of what he was dealing with.
Yeah, I do have some opposition against like I noticed last year, like players were just being rested.
Yeah.
Preventatively and weren't injured. Like I remember last year, the Warriors, they rested a bunch of their star guys when they were in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And for the fans, they're like, well, this is our one chance a year to see this team, to see the Warriors that like cost more money. Right. Yeah. So it's like you're spending a lot of money in these tickets and then you're just sitting these guys day of and whatever. And Steve Kerr was basically like, that's not part of my job. Like, it's my job to like keep these guys healthy and play and blah, blah, blah. So I think like that I don't think is cool. You know?
I agree with that.
But
again, I would put that back to backs. Right. And where all these teams are now like forced to be like, oh, okay, do you play this end of the back-to-back? Do you play the other end of the back-to-back? You know? And then that's how there's like this trickle-down effect when you have like the 3 games in 4 nights or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Especially as you get into your 30s. Like Steph 36 now? He's something around that. Like he's older than you think.
35. He will be 36 on March 14th.
Like, damn. Right?
Still like, got that baby face.
He does. He still has that face. He absolutely does. Even like, the beard isn't fooling anybody.
How annoying is it for defenders to have to, you know, chase this guy around nonstop, like literally running around like a kid, looking like a kid, and just completely owning you on the basketball court all the time?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think like one thing that's kind of underrated about Steph Curry, if that's possible, is his speed. You know what I mean? Like, obviously his shooting, he's the greatest shooter ever, but like his speed is really what makes the difference for him. The amount that he cuts, like even if you guard him well enough that he like gives up the ball, he's constantly running and cutting and switching screens. It's like so exhausting to keep up with him. That's
his endurance, his stamina.
Yeah, like that's why he gets so many shots up. I just feel like that part of his game like isn't talked about enough. Like his speed is incredible. But anyway, all right, let's move on and talk about the Raptors. The Raptors, obviously, you know, we won three games in a row. We got our pizza party. But because of this three-game winning streak, even though we did lose against Dallas, you know, a lot of people are talking like, hey, wait a second. You know, the Raptors are only like three and a half games behind the play-in. You know, we have these 2024 picks that are like late. They're late picks. They're from other teams. You know, are we, you know, we have this Jakob Poeltl elusive pick that San Antonio has, blah, blah, blah. But people are like wondering like, hey, like maybe we should be going for the play-in this year. Maybe we should make a run at this because, you know, we have these new players. We figured a lot out. We are still figuring more out, but like this team is clicking. Grady Dick is playing really well off the bench. Him and Kelly Olynyk seem to have like really good chemistry together now. Like, do you think the Raptors should be, you know, everybody wants to win, of course, but do you think they should be winning and trying to have like a play-in spot just for the sake of like this team having experience, being competitive and being, you know, relevant in some respects? Or do you feel like the future, you know, building of this team, should we should focus more on that?
I like the way the team is playing right now. You know, I was not happy with the way things were going down before the All-Star break, but the way they lost in New Orleans, the way they lost in Houston,
yeah,
the
no-show
at home against San Antonio. Like, that was not fun to see. And I was like, if you keep going like this, you're going to develop some pretty bad habits. And so I think to come out with the effort level, the intensity that they've shown, the cohesiveness that they've shown since the All-Star break, I am much more in favor of that. And I'm happy to watch that play out, however it plays out. And if it gets them some wins, so be it. And I think I probably lean towards conveying the pick to San Antonio this year. Everything everyone says about the draft, this year's draft, is just nothing but bad news. And like Masai, you know, when he spoke at the trade deadline, he was just like trying to keep himself, hold himself back from completely, you know, obliterating that draft class. Like, his first instinct when he was asked about it, he says, oh, you know, I can see Dan Tolsman being like, don't say it. Like,
okay, you were so about to do a decent Masai impression there, I have to say. You were starting one, and I feel like you low-key bailed on it, but work on that, Vivek. I feel like you could pull off a really solid Masai.
Believe in yourself. Believe in the city.
He's such a good person to impersonate. How have I not thought of this?
Maybe this is a good...
He's such a character.
Yeah, maybe this is a good idea for Halloween. Just,
It's an excuse to wear a really nice suit.
And maybe I'll just get, like, a bunch of his quotes.
Yeah.
Like, just all over me.
And then find, like, a BlackBerry.
Believe in yourself. We will win. We will win. We will win in Toronto.
Yeah, and then you have to have a BlackBerry, of course, because that's Masai's whole thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course.
So,
yeah, I think everything that everyone says about the draft, like, makes me feel like, just get rid of the pick. It's fine. Like, make sure you have the pick next year, because next year projects to be a pretty strong draft. And
yeah, I don't know our pick situation for next season. Do we have our pick? Do you know? It's fine if you don't, because I'm springing that on you.
No. So the way it works is, if the Raptors pick in the top six this year, they get to keep the pick.
Yeah.
And so by default, by keeping the pick this year, then they are potentially conceding next year's pick to San Antonio. Unless next year's pick also ends up being in the top six. Then that gets carried forward to 2026.
God, that's so convoluted.
Unless the Raptors pick in the top six again in 2026. And in which case, the Spurs then just get two second round picks. And they say enough of this.
Right. So this essentially this pick is gone. Like the odds of getting some this point, thing, the odds of getting this thing back feel slim.
Yeah, at some point in the next 3 years, right?
Right.
Because if you end up outside the top six this year, then it's going straight to San Antonio. And so as soon as it goes to San Antonio, automatically the implications going forward are gone, right? Like you've conveyed the pick.
Right.
Now you have your pick for next year, no matter what. And so I think that's an important thing where if you look at the teams that are ahead of the Raptors right now in the East, I don't think anyone would look at Boston, Cleveland, Milwaukee, New York, Miami, Philadelphia. That's the top six right now. I don't think anyone is looking at those top six teams saying, oh, the Raptors are going to catch up next year, right?
Right.
It's going to take a bit longer than that. And then you've still got, you know, Indiana, who look pretty good. You've still got Orlando, who look pretty good and might who have the cap space
might
to
even
get
be better next year. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're looking at six to eight teams that are going to be difficult to catch in the East. Then you've got the West that is absolutely loaded. Like you've got the Lakers and the Warriors in ninth and 10th. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you could fairly say that that's, you know, 10 teams that project to be better than the Raptors out of the West next year. You've still got a Memphis team that will be back with Ja Morant, and they'll have a high pick in this year's draft. So you can bet that they'll be moving up the standings. You've got a San Antonio team that now might be looking to make a move to get someone next to Wemby, and you know, maybe they get a Trae Young and all of a sudden they look really good, right? And so I think there's still, you know, anywhere between 15 to 20 teams that could be better than the Raptors next year. And so
I would love for Trae Young and Wemby to be on the same team. I just have to put that out there. I want it to happen. I'm sorry, Atlanta, that sucks for Atlanta, but I want it to happen. Just the photo shoots alone. Because it's like the shortest NBA star with the tallest NBA star.
Yeah, and it's the perfect guy to make up for Trae Young's defense.
Yes, because he's long enough.
Yeah.
Literally, because he's long enough. I agree. Anyway.
And yeah, so, you know,
yeah.
And so having a pick that high, you don't want to have, you know, the second half of next season being like, oh my God, like we have to still find a way to be bad enough to make sure the pick, you know, doesn't go to San Antonio.
Right, right.
So
you're saying get rid of this pick this year because we don't want to have to, because it's a bad draft. And then that way we don't have to worry about it next year. And then wherever we land next year is where we land.
Yeah.
And we're better off for that. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the only counter to that is if you somehow sneak into the top four. If you sneak into the top four of this year's draft, then maybe there's a conversation to be had, right? Where
that changes things. Yeah.
Where a top four pick could be better than maybe, like, you know, the 12th or 13th pick next year.
Right.
But again, I think that's a situation where, you know, if you go into the lottery with, say, the eighth best odds and you end up picking eighth, then I think you're perfectly fine with San Antonio having that pick. If you go into the lottery with the eighth best odds and you somehow end up in the top four, then you're like, hey, okay, you know what? We got lucky.
Right. Yeah, it's so interesting how all this can play out, because there's a part of me that's like, you know what, you know, especially with Trae Young being out for a month, in the Hawks potentially slipping in the stands, which would make.
Well, the funny thing is they're winning.
They're winning without him. Yeah, which is crazy. Oh, my God. Like, that's right. I forgot that they're winning right now. Yeah. So maybe they won't slip. Maybe they'll be in the Eastern Conference Finals. No kidding. But, you know, I feel like it is really valuable for young teams to have playoff like experience. Right. And I'm a big believer in not being a part of like a losing culture. I think like when you're a part of a losing culture for a really long time, it's hard to adjust. So I feel like the play-in, even though I wouldn't expect to go anywhere, I just feel like a high stakes game with Scotty as, you know, the firm leader of this team would be really valuable experience. And then going into next year, it's like, okay, how are we going to build? Because I don't see Masai building this team around the draft over the next like 2+ years. Not that we're going to sign a bunch of free agents necessarily, but I think he's just going to keep making these like strategic moves, like smaller moves with guys who have bigger promise. I feel like that's just his style and that's what he's going to continue to do. And he's going to try and, I don't know, figure it out. Because like, I feel like if you're drafting this year, next year, and then Scotty's like 4 years older than these guys, then are they on the same timeline? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think 4 years is okay. I don't think you're too worried. Or I think maybe, you know, where it was with Pascal, where it's like 7+, then you start to get into wondering if it's the right fit. But at the same time, you know, we talk about how much we love seeing Halliburton and Siakam play together. And
that's the same age gap. Yeah.
He's just a year older. So I think at the end of the day, if you're good enough, you don't care. Right.
Yeah.
Like Kyle Lowry was what I think he was 7 years older than Siakam. Right. Mm-hmm. So
that's fair.
You care about it when you care about it, but when you're good enough and you're winning, no one cares.
Right. That's very, very legit. Can I ask you other Raptors questions that were on our docket? Is that cool?
Yes. But very quickly.
Yes.
I will shamelessly plug my Raptors Substack that I've begun, because my last post was about whether or not the Raptors should look to keep this year's pick.
And nice. So
if you want all kind of the angles on everything that you need to consider, you can go check out my Substack. It is Raptors in 7. It's a weekly newsletter, hence the tie-in with 7. And obviously, 7 has so many great connections to the mm-hmm. Raptors because of Kyle Lowry, the greatest Raptor of all time. Mm-hmm. Some memorable game 7s. And so, be sure to check that out.
Amazing. I am going to read that actually, because I do want to have a bit greater grasp on this whole situation. Okay, two players I want to ask you about. I want to ask you about Chris Boucher. Why is Chris Boucher not getting minutes with this squad? I feel like this is kind of a big mystery amongst fans just watching these games. Like, where did Chris Boucher go?
Yeah, I think that one is... I feel bad for Chris because mm-hmm. I feel like as someone who has consistently played hard and been a pro for this organization, if they knew he wasn't going to be a part of the rotation, they should have just looked to move him at the deadline.
Yeah.
And so I think he's someone that can help some of these younger guys in terms of forming good habits. And I'm sure he's doing whatever he can off the court and in practices in terms of showing that right approach and mindset. But I do think there are things that he brings on the court as well. And now Darko might look at that and say, well, he's not, you know, he doesn't fit the offensive system in terms of making those quick decisions and whatnot. But I think there is something to be said for his hustle and his ability to go get it off the offensive glass and just scramble on the floor defensively. And I think there should be moments for some of that, right? And I think Boucher has actually had historically some of his best games against Dallas. And so mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. things are kind of getting away from you in that third quarter, as they did, why not give him a look and see if he can give you a bit of a spark?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just feels like it was kind of out of the blue, because it wasn't like, oh, Chris Boucher's been struggling all season, like blah, blah, blah. Like none of those narratives really existed around him. I mean, he was, I would just say, the same player he was last year, more or less, maybe slight declines, and but nothing significant. So yeah, it just feels like a huge mystery to me why he's not getting any minutes. And then the other player I want to ask you about is Bruce Brown. Does Bruce Brown seems like he's struggling with this team. Do you think he just kind of low-key doesn't care and doesn't want to be here? That's my little conspiracy theory. That's me putting on the conspiracy hat.
Yeah, I mean, I've been getting those vibes since, you know, those couple games that he played before the deadline too, right? And I think,
yeah, because he kind of came thinking like, okay, I'm gonna get traded. I think we all thought he was gonna get traded, and then he didn't get traded. And then I think he kind of at first was like, okay, I'm gonna be here. Started playing well, and then dipped again. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you started coughing, but I finished my sentence. And then I was like, I don't. I didn't take an improv class for that. I'm sorry. Oh my God. But yeah, no, Bruce Brown. I mean, it's kind of been a little disappointing, I think. Because, you know, you look at like the difference maker he was with Denver when they won. And then now it's like, oh, like I feel like Denver still needs him, but obviously,
yeah, Denver could probably use him. A championship contender could probably use him, and he's playing like, wow, I really wish I was on one of those teams.
I'm sure it's hard to go from winning a championship to like maybe in the play-in, maybe not. Like I'm sure that's a difficult swing, but also, I mean, he chose to leave. He did sign with a playoff contender. I will give him that. And he probably didn't think he would get traded. But it's just like, I don't know, man. It just sucks to see somebody on the floor who's like not totally motivated. And like, I know him and Boucher are like different positions, so it doesn't make sense to swap them. But I don't know. It's just kind of a little unfortunate to me that we have this like fan favorite who we all love not getting any playing time. And then you have this guy who's like new and is supposed to be really good and just kind of seems like body language wise, just seems a little unmotivated to be here, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. He seems like one of those role players that's saying, well, if I'm not going to be on a championship contender, then I want to do more than just play a role, you know? And it's like, well, hey, I want to work on dribbling left today, and I want to work on this little floater today, and you know, I want to work on this pull-up three today, and there's no real stakes on this team, so who cares?
Yeah. It's not great. But, you know, all that aside, we are looking good, and I remain hopeful for the rest of the season. With that being said, Vivek, it is time for a hottie highlight of the week. And obviously, I've been saving this all episode long because it is the most obvious of all our hottie highlights of the week. And that is the pizza party. Vivek, we got it. We got our pizza party.
Only had to get to the end of Feb, but we got there.
Hey, man, it's a leap
for a three-game win streak.
And then to me, the craziest thing is that, like, Darko said dinner. Like he said dinner, and then all the fans turned it into a pizza party because it just sounded like a really cute, dare I say, minor league thing to do.
Yeah.
And then after we won these three games, Darko said that they in fact declined the fancy dinner and have opted for a pizza party. Which is incredible because I feel
Raptors
like
Twitter influence.
I feel like we did that. We made this pizza party happen.
Where's the Drake video?
Where's the Drake video? You
see
know,
this? Look around.
Open Gym had a reservation at like West Harbor or whatever one of those steak restaurants are. And then they were like, sorry, we're not going to make it. We're just having pizza. somewhere. Where did they eat pizza? In the locker room? Where did they go? I don't even know. I don't even think they went to a place. I think they probably just ordered it, like delivery.
They might have.
And then what? And then what pizza did they eat? Do you know?
I do not know yet. I actually believe it might be happening tonight.
It's happening tonight. That makes sense.
Possibly.
And I mean, like, I'm just like, I'm nervous for them. Like, are they ordering pizza?
Do you think?
No one sponsors this podcast. So I can say whatever I want about whatever brand of pizza.
Do you think Darko should set like a scale? And it's like, this is your first 3-game win streak. So you get pizza if you want to move up.
If we win another 3 games in a row, you get North of Brooklyn. Like, is that?
Yeah. Wow. Is that where this needs to go now?
Or is it like Pizza Libretto and then North of Brooklyn? I feel like now we're really, you know. And then there's that Maker's Pizza place, which I haven't been to actually. What is the best pizza in Toronto? I feel like that's still up for debate.
If you have a 3-game win streak that includes beating LeBron, then you get to have Blaze Pizza.
Okay. Oh, there's Blondies? Or Blondes? Blondies? There's a Blondies pizza.
Oh, no, I was saying Blaze because that's LeBron's pizza, right? Like,
oh, I didn't know that.
He has like a steak in that. Here? Yeah. It's like on, I want to say like Richmond and John.
Wow. What about like, I mean, have you had Papa John's pizza, which is like Shaq's pizza? It's very
right. Nice.
Very mad.
So maybe if you have a 3-game win streak that includes beating one of Shaq's teams.
I were a smart business person, I would be saying I love and then like just the biggest pizza chains just for sponsorship, right? Like I would be like, no, I love pizza. I love Domino's pizza. I love like whatever, you know what I mean? But I'm not a smart business person, so that hasn't happened. But yeah. They opted for a pizza party, which I think is very hilarious, very childlike, but also very endearing. Curious to see what pizza they're going to get. I feel like we're all going to have a lot of opinions about this pizza party. I don't think a pizza party is ever going to be dissected more than this one.
Yeah, like the open gym episode of the pizza party is going to do numbers.
It's
like,
the whole half it's hour.
Championship numbers.
There's nothing else in the episode. It's just, oh my God, that would be incredible. They should live stream it. You know, if they really knew what they were doing, they would live stream this pizza party. And they would have a sponsor. They would have a sponsor, and then Darko would be like, "I was just trying to buy dinner for everybody," and then it turns into this massive thing. Yeah. But I'm really
some place is going to end up naming like it's going to be called like the Darko Slice.
They should.
Yeah,
they should. Oh my God, Vivek, what would the Darko Slice be?
So it definitely doesn't have. Any pineapple? Yeah, he said no pineapple. That.
We could do olives, like black olives.
Yeah, I think he's like old school, so it'd be like just pepperoni, olives. I don't know what else you got going on there, but yeah, I think he's pretty traditional about his pizza.
What like a topping combination I love that I think would make sense as the Darko pizza is black olives. Bacon, not like the like actual like pieces, like real pieces of bacon, not the random crunchy stuff. Real pieces of bacon and mushrooms, and then like a little bit of like chili flakes or a bit of chili, or just like a touch of chili oil. I feel like that combination called the Darko pizza would actually be very good. And you know, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Serbian pizza is. I'm sure they have a pizza, like a type of pizza that's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know what that is. By the way,
we might have to do some research on this.
Have you seen footage of games being played in Serbia. That's like outdoors and like the smoke and the lights. Oh my God, it looks so cool. I think they were talking about the Warriors doing an exhibition game out there. I don't know if it's confirmed, but there was talk of that happening in honor of their assistant coach that passed away, Deki. But yeah, anyway, I need like, it's a boost for Serbian tourism. I will say that.
No, I mean, the culture there when it comes to sports is just insane. Like, I'm a big soccer fan, so it's like when you see these teams like Red Star Belgrade or whoever playing, like, it is intense. Yeah, you do not, you know, want to, you definitely want to, you know, make some friends before you go, probably, and make sure you're as safe as can be if you're attending one of these things.
Yes. I like whenever I see international like sporting events, like I always think like, oh, those look really, really cool. But then I'm low key, like, I don't see any women in this crowd. Like, I don't think there's any women in attendance at some of these events.
It's funny you say that. Do you watch Hot Ones?
Yes.
So there was an episode that Matt Damon was on, and I believe his wife is Argentinian. And so they decided to like go back to her home and visit one time. And one of the things that Matt Damon really wanted to do was go to an Argentinian soccer match. And so he goes to his father-in-law and is like, hey, can we go to this local match that's here? And obviously Matt Damon is such a great storyteller, and he's just like, father-in-law looks at me, he's like, okay, we go, but no women and children. this is serious business. There is too much at stake, lives might be lost, like, we got to protect it's the that intense. Children.
Yeah, that's so crazy. That makes me sad because like I want to go, and I'm sure they want to. I'm sure they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, I'm sure there are women and children that go. But
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, if you look at that footage, it's like, you know, or like other. I don't know. It depends on the country, I think. But
No, I was talking about Argentina, Brazil. Yeah. Like, obviously, they have
women that go. Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It looks fun. I want to go to a basketball game in Serbia. I want to experience this. Someone let me know if it's safe for a single woman to go. Maybe I have to put a fake wedding ring on or something. just to be left alone. If it's like that or not, I have no idea. But anyway, we should wrap it up there because we're getting carried away. Thank you, Vivek, for joining me. For those listening, let us know what you're up to again and where they can find you on the internet.
Yeah, you can find my general NBA work on Sportsnet. You can find my Raptors work at my Substack now, Raptors in 7. It's pinned to my profile. So my Twitter profile is at Vivek M. Jacob. So you can find me on there and go check it out. And what else do I have going on? I'm doing cricket work for Cricket Canada. Yeah. So if you're a cricket fan, you can go check that out. And besides that, thanks so much for having me on, Catherine. This was a blast.
Thank you, Vivek. Always enjoy having you on. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening. And we will catch you next time. Bye.